This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In March, we heard about the Capital Campaign, launched by Hospital Hospitality House of Southwest Michigan, to build new cottages near both Bronson and Borges Hospitals in Kalamazoo. Coming up, CEO Judy Marcus Paget tells us where things stand with the Two Houses, One Heart campaign. But first, earlier this year, the Detroit News reported that Michigan was one of the states where Syrian refugees are most likely to settle. A forum on ensuring that those refugees who come to Kalamazoo feel welcome and are able to settle here is being held tomorrow night. We're joined by Joel Bell. He is Assistant Branch Director of Bethany Christian Services in Kalamazoo. And Shadia Kanan will moderate tomorrow night's forum at 6:30 at the Kalamazoo Public Library on welcoming refugees. She is a member of the Kalamazoo Interfaith Coalition for Peace and Justice, which is a sponsor of tomorrow night's forum. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Joel, I'll start with you. If someone is coming to Kalamazoo and they were to turn to Bethany Christian Services, what are some of the things that you would be able to do for them right now?
Well, thank you. Bethany serves as one of the sponsor agencies assisting refugees in resettling here in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, and here in Kalamazoo as well now. And the services we provide really span the scope of things that a family needs to start a new life here in Southwest Michigan. So that means helping them locate housing, helping them locate jobs, helping the children enroll in school, enrolling the family into English language classes, and just helping them learn to adjust to the culture. We work closely with co-sponsors, and so that means a congregation typically in the community joins us as a co-sponsor. And they work alongside us, providing welcome and helping the family gather the items they need to live, becoming their friends, really forming a new community for this family.
And how many families would you say that you could help in, say, the average month? If everyone shows up at your door, how many of those could you help?
Well, the families actually come to us by referral from our federal partners. And so we typically here in Southwest Michigan, this year we'll welcome between Samaritas and Bethany, our colleague agency Samaritas, we will welcome approximately 150 individuals in 2016. We'll repeat that, maybe a little more, in 2017.
So, Shadi, I want to talk to you for a little bit about just the whole process of coming to America. First, tell people about how, where were you born, first of all?
I was born in West Bank city of Nablus, which is Palestine, and which is now under Israeli occupation. We came to this country, I came with my husband. He was getting his specialty as a medical graduate from University of Cairo in neurology. And our hopes were to spend 5 years for his residency training and go back. But then the reason we came here as immigrants is that because the law of supply and demand and the quota system at that time in the United States, with the Vietnam War raging at the time, they needed physicians. So under that premise, we came as immigrants. And what helped is that my brother-in-law, who had passed away in 1985, was a professor at Western Michigan University in the chemistry department, Dr. Adley Kanan. So he arranged for us to come as immigrants instead of waiting for the matching program in the medical field. So that's how we came to this country, and we were very lucky to get that position, and Kalamazoo has been our home since 1971.
1971, yes. So many years.
Many years, yes.
But I would think that there are still some things about making a transition to another country, the United States in particular, which are still kind of universal. Can you tell us maybe about some of the more difficult things about making that transition and moving to the United States?
Yes, well, actually homesickness and feeling missing the family and friends and adjusting to a new culture. Although I have gone to an American school, a friend's Quaker school, since I was a child. So my adjustment was a little easier than what the refugees right now are experiencing, although I can very much identify with their experience. And that's why I'm going to volunteer as much as I can in trying to accommodate and help in every aspect that I can. But the experience itself was pleasant in so many ways. I never felt as a foreigner. In fact, my accent was always a topic of conversation. Where do you come from? And that I lost that welcoming question, where are you from? It has a different tone right now. So since September 11, I feel the alienation of being all of a sudden a foreigner, which I didn't feel before that. And that is also compounded by the Islamophobia and under the current atmosphere, which is very toxic right now, I'm getting to feel uncomfortable for my children and my grandchildren.
But and you say this really kind of started back in 2001, September 11th, 2001, when the terrorist attacks were struck in the United States.
Because Islam right now became associated, paralleled with terrorism. And I have to make one point here. ISIS, which is the Islamic terror group, they used Islam as it's a hijacking of the religion. And to point out that 99.9% of their victims are actually themselves Muslim. We have to remember that fact. And something else I'd like to mention, that in the wake of September 11, a group was formed on the east side of the state and then copied in here, which is called Bridges, which was under the auspices of our state attorney, Margaret Kiera. And we met with law enforcement once a month of all kinds, local, state, and federal, to kind of alleviate that atmosphere of mistrust that happened. And we had accomplished quite a bit with that. And that's where the idea for the forum on Tuesday took place, because I have spoken to somebody from the state of Michigan, and it's a group, it's called Welcoming Michigan, and other groups. And that's very important, because I think the civil society is so vibrant in Michigan and in the United States. And the spirit of volunteerism, the ethics behind it, which prevails actually, which has built this country. And it stems from the churches, from the school, from the ethics. And that's Welcoming Michigan. And before that, the city commission also passed a resolution welcoming refugees and immigrants of all kind. And that's what we need to build upon to give these refugees the comfort zone that they need at this point. It's not just the housing and the transportation and the schooling. It's for them to feel secure and to feel welcome and to feel that they have a future in this country. And that's what we're hoping to accomplish together.
If someone is listening to this and they're thinking, wow, that does sound like a lot for a family to go through, I'd like to help them out. What are some things that you might suggest that someone can do if that applies to them?
That would be great. I mean, those sorts of people that are interested, I love to talk to them. And there's a variety of ways to be involved. We are always looking for new co-sponsor congregations. And I should maybe clarify, that doesn't necessarily have to be the whole congregation, but a strong group of maybe 8-10 people within that body that will partner with us to become friends and community for a refugee family. But they can simply reach out to me. I'd be happy to get them started on the process of doing that. Other ways people can be involved, we need landlords. We need people who will partner with us to provide housing to refugee families. And we need employers. We need people who will help to employ refugees. And I would just add that these are folks who are legally employable and, from my observation, have been extremely hardworking and motivated individuals. And so we're looking for employers who will work with them. And we're looking for other sorts of volunteers, too, people who will become trained to do some English tutoring with the families, people who will help kind of navigate these other bureaucracies. And I maybe should also just quickly add here, too, we're always looking for foster parents for refugee children as well. We're talking a bit right at the moment about the family program, which is a great program. We also provide services to unaccompanied refugee minors. And those children end up typically in refugee foster homes. And so we have a constant need to recruit and train new refugee foster parents.
You mentioned unaccompanied, so that leaves open the possibility that their parents are still alive. They're not necessarily orphaned. Do you make some sort of attempt to, or is there some group that is making some sort of attempt to at least get families in touch with each other if they have ended up being separated?
Absolutely. So it's obviously different case by case, but our social workers assist the children in making contact with family members. Many of the children are able to have some sort of phone contact, but in some cases, sadly, they are orphans. They have no living parents any longer. So it just is different case by case, but we certainly facilitate that where we can.
Shadi, you want to get in there?
Yes, I would like to give tribute to the city of Kalamazoo. I have talked about the Board of Commissions passing a resolution welcoming, declaring Michigan a welcoming county and joining with the Michigan Welcoming Michigan movement, which is part of the Welcoming America or United States, but also Kalamazoo City Council with the collaboration and the partnership with Welcoming Michigan and the Kalamazoo Islamic Center and the Kalamazoo Muslim community, which I'm a part of. In March of 2016, we passed a city resolution declaring Kalamazoo a city of peace and declaring it fighting against Islamophobia and welcoming people of all religions and all ethnicity. I am very proud to be a Kalamazoo resident right now. And right now, there is an effort among a few of us religious and community members to start working in Portage as a city of sanctuary. And that is going to be coming, and I hope we hear more about that.
Something that you plan to take to the Portage City Council?
Yes, yes.
Joel, what are some things that you would like to be able to do for refugees that want to settle here that you can't do right now?
One of the things that we're beginning to work on already with some partners in Kalamazoo is to address the housing need for refugees. And we're looking for ways, some creative ideas are developing right now to come up with both kind of short-term housing and then longer-term housing that specifically meets the needs of refugee families. A couple of the just benefits to that, when you can have some of the refugee families living in proximity to each other, it allows them to support each other and to become a community of sorts to each other. It also provides an ease of access to some services where you can have a social worker and other services come to one site and be available to a whole range of families. And then on the kind of on that transitional interim type housing need, some of the refugee families have had many children. And so finding suitable housing for them has taken a little bit of time. And so we're looking for options that would help us accommodate them upon their arrival and provide them with just good and appropriate housing for, you know, a short term while we find something longer term as well. So I think there's some great English services in town we've been able to access, but we continue to just see a need to find more flexible ways to provide English language services based on some of the schedules the refugee adults have had. I know the schools, I would just commend them for their hard work with the refugee children. And our interaction with the schools has been fantastic. But at the same time, I know the schools need additional support. The influx of refugee children, I think, has been really seen as a privilege and as a great opportunity by the schools, but also presents some additional work and challenge for them at the same time. So I think kind of in that educational sphere, in the housing sphere, and then I think I mentioned earlier, but just in employment, we continue to have a need to develop both programming, but also job opportunities specific to, I would say refugees, but really could expand it and just say to English language learners, the sorts of jobs that someone can do while they're learning English.
But you mentioned there the idea that this is an opportunity. I don't know that it's always seen that way, but maybe talk about that a little bit. What is the opportunity for perhaps a school system? What's the opportunity for someone running a business to employ or to educate people who are immigrants or refugees?
Sure. It's truly enriching to the school systems and to our community to have refugees and other immigrants in our community. And so within the school system, that provides just an increased exposure for our children who are already here to cultures of the world. They get to hear firsthand children who natively speak Swahili or natively speak Arabic, and they get to interact with them and become friends with them. I've been able to witness that firsthand as I step over at refugee families' homes who are from the Congo and see neighbor kids or school friends there at their house, becoming friends with them and spending time at their home in the afternoon. And so they're befriending. Their knowledge of and exposure to the world is deepened and broadened altogether through these interactions. I think for employers, it's much the same. We're bringing people here who are eager to work, who want to work, and who are hardworking people. I just talked to an employer earlier this week about one of our folks that we have been working with for some time. And his comment was similar to what I just said. Basically, he wishes that he had more people just like this who had such a strong work ethic. So I think for our community, our schools, our jobs, I think even in our church settings and in our religious spheres, this is provides just a depth and a richness. Many of the families that we're talking about have begun going to area churches or to the Kalamazoo Islamic Center, and so it just provides more community contacts for them, more of a social connection for them, but also in return to those church bodies, to those religious bodies, it provides just new people and new experiences and new perspectives into their congregations as well.
Yeah, good. Chadia, go ahead.
To add on to Joe's point, I think hate stems from fear, and fear stems from not knowing the other, from being ignorant of the other and his experience. So if these children or these families meet together in a humanitarian basis as neighbors, as friends, as schoolmates, that dissipates the fear of the other and promotes a more understanding. And this way we can combat this discrimination and this fear among the refugees come with a wealth of cultures. They come from countries that have existed for thousands of years. I'm speaking about African or Asian, specifically the Middle East. I mean, Syria is known to be one of the most developed civilizations in history. And I'm sure these refugees will bring a wealth of cultural information and to share with this community.
Shadia and Joel, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Joel Bell is Assistant Branch Director of Bethany Christian Services in Kalamazoo. Shadia Kanaan will moderate tomorrow night's forum at the Kalamazoo Public Library. The Welcoming Refugees panel discussion begins at 6:30 in the Van Dusen Room. It is sponsored by the Kalamazoo Interfaith Coalition of Peace and Justice. You can also find links with more details at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Back in March, we spoke with the CEO of Hospital Hospitality House of Southwest Michigan. At that time, Judy Marcus Paget told us about plans to build new cottages near both Bronson and Borges hospitals. Now, Hospital Hospitality House is relaunching its Two Houses, One Heart campaign, and Judy Marcus Paget is here again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again, Gordon.
So let's go back and explain what exactly is this project, what is Hospital Hospitality House of Southwest Michigan hoping to do here?
Hospital Hospitality House has been operating on South Street in the Historic District for 32 years now. We were founded by the Junior League and Bronson and Borges Hospitals. The Board of Directors several years ago started looking at how we operated and that there was probably a better way to meet our mission and meet the needs of the people that we serve. It's a beautiful old home, and I can't stress old enough. It's 157 years old. It's just not efficient to operate, to heat, to cool. The biggest issue is we are not handicap accessible. So we turn people away daily that need our services and simply cannot get into the building. So a few years ago, we launched the Two Houses, One Heart campaign. We want to build two houses next to each hospital so we're closer for the families that we serve. It will all be on one floor, the house, or accessible, with private rooms and private bathrooms. And that's something we are not able to offer on South Street as well.
And let's go back again and explain who these families are that might contact Hospital Hospitality House and say, hey, we're in need of your services.
Right. And many people don't know about us, Gordon, because they haven't needed our services. And if you live here in Kalamazoo, you probably will not need our services. But people, we have regional health care here with Bronson and Borges. They pull people from all over Southwest Michigan and beyond. And families come with those patients. We know patients heal better when family is nearby to support them and love them. So that's why we want to be next door. 30% of our guests are parents who have a baby in the neonatal intensive care unit at Bronson. And I like to use the example of that group of guests that we serve. They have a baby. Who with a new baby doesn't get up in the middle of the night to check on the baby? It's a natural thing to be worried, and especially a baby that's in an intensive care unit. By being five blocks away from Bronson, we simply cannot offer that to families. If they wake up worried about their baby, they can call and talk to a nurse and be reassured. We are looking forward to the day where they can walk just maybe a block or so to the unit and see their baby.
You mentioned that there's research out there that shows that healing is actually better when you have families nearby. Does that result in, say, shorter hospital stays for people?
Yes, shorter hospital stays. And what we're hearing from hospital leaders is it decreases the amount, the readmission rate, which is a big thing that we've heard a lot about with affordable health care. I mean, I can quickly get out of my area of expertise
Right, sure.
here. But we have been told by hospital leadership throughout the country that if a family is there to support the patient and then hear the discharge instructions, that discharge and going home for the patient goes much smoother and the chance of readmission goes down drastically. So we are the reason families can stay nearby. We hear from people if they couldn't stay with us at the house, we ask, what would you have done? And the answers we hear are camping in the waiting room, sleeping on the floor of the patient's room, and then nobody is getting being healthy, or sleeping in my car in the hospital parking ramp. It's getting cold out. That's not a good alternative, even in warm weather, especially in cold weather. Many people can't afford a hotel, and we don't do any financial screening. The average stay for a family at the hospitality house is 4 days. If you take the cost of a hotel room, even at a special hospital rate, maybe $80 a night, times 4 nights, we're quickly depleting many people's emergency savings with that when they already have trauma and stress going on.
You mentioned the last time you were here about best practices. Is this a more common thing across the country that you have facilities which are near the hospital, not five blocks away, like you have on South Street, but something which is right a short walk from where somebody
yes.
may be hospitalized?
We are in the same family as Ronald McDonald Houses and Hope Lodges, which the American Cancer Center provides lodging for cancer center patients and families near major cancer centers. And we have looked at how those, our family of organizations, provide services. Many times they're physically connected to the hospital that they're serving or the people or inside of the hospital. I toured one Ronald McDonald House this past fall that was inside of the hospital, so you never had to leave the building to go to your accommodations. There's pros and cons to that. And it's hard. I think we would be hard-pressed to have one of our local hospitals give us enough space to do that. But they have been generous in offering property for us to build on next door.
And one of these buildings is currently under construction, correct?
That's right. Let me back up a bit. The campaign that we launched, we needed to raise $4.8 million to build the two houses, and that included $1 million for an endowment fund to help offset the increased operating money that we will need in running two houses as opposed to one. We are just shy of $4.1 million right now, so we have relaunched the campaign to close it up, to fill that gap and finish. We were able to break ground on the first cottage last spring because the home builders of West Michigan came forward and said, we want to build that house for you as a gift. So they have been moving the dirt this summer. The foundation is poured. That house is on Henson Ave, just east of Borges. We will hopefully be up and operating in that house by the end of the summer 2017.
Now, the last time you were here, you talked about the possibility of being able to have a ribbon-cutting ceremony before the end of the calendar year.
Yeah.
Basically, based on what you've just told us, that is not going to happen. Was this more complicated than you thought? Was it more difficult to raise the money than you thought?
It's a little more difficult. The money is coming in nicely, a little slower than we anticipated. But the major reason for the slowed down timeline is the home builders are relying on volunteers, and with that, they have to be able to work when the volunteers are ready to work. And we are getting some wonderful donations from that group of members of the home builders and supplies. It's just going a little slower. Thankfully, for the mild fall, they've been able to kind of catch up and do some more work.
So these are volunteers, but presumably they also build homes for a living. So
that's right.
They have to work around the other schedules that they have.
Correct.
Is that kind of what you're facing?
That's right. That's right. The home builders in the past, for some 20-some years, their community project has been a Habitat for Humanity home. They have done what's called a fast build. And they chose our project this year instead of a fast build for Habitat. They saw it as the hospitality house is serving more people than they could with one Habitat home. But with that, it's a much bigger project than they've ever done. They see it as a large house, but it is a very large house. 7 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, custom. It's not a cookie cutter house. So they're learning as they go, and hopefully what they learn we can transfer to the second house and be more efficient with the building.
Will the second house then be built by professionals, or would it still be volunteers?
That will be up for bids. The home builders have asked to be considered, but there's not a commitment for them to do that as a gift.
So another $700,000 that you have to raise, is
that's
that correct?
That's right. That's right. And then we'll be there. And that's money. We do have the money for the endowment. We were blessed with a gift from a local donor for the $1 million for our endowment. So our future operating is set with that gift. We just need enough money to build both, and that's the furnishings, the carpeting, the window treatments, everything that goes into those houses.
So assuming that at some point, maybe next year, you have mm-hmm. both of these houses up and ready to go, I assume that's your goal.
We're probably looking at 2 years before we're up and operating in both new houses.
But you hope to have one by next year then?
Correct. Yes.
When the day comes that you have both of these operating, what is that going to mean in terms of the number of families you'll be able to serve?
We will almost double our capacity. We have planned for growth because we know when we're next to that hospital or closer, we're going to have more families that want to stay with us. And once we take the barrier of stairs away and make it accessible, we will be able to serve and welcome more people that we cannot do right now.
So explain the name of your campaign, Two Houses, One Heart.
Two Houses, One Heart. We wanted to stress to people that we'll continue to be one organization, one heart, but we will have two locations. We will continue to be independent of the hospitals, our own private 501c3. We are not owned by either hospital or another organization. So we came up with that catch line that it'll still be us, the one heart, but two locations.
Judy Marcus Padgett, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Judy Marcus Padgett is CEO of Hospital Hospitality House of Southwest Michigan. You can find a link at our website, WMUK.org, with the details about their Two Houses, One Heart campaign. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.